Now, hey there, welcome back. We still got Charlie on the line. Charlie, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, right on.
I hope I'm not hogging all of your
time. Oh, no, and I'm happy and thankful to be able to talk about this, because I think
and the reason for the urban growth boundary question is I've heard often, I don't know if it's rumors or whatever, that if the city were to want to annex for additional land, that this little area between the new Costco and Tumalo would be a prime location for annexation.
Okay. Okay. So we'll talk about that. So you know, LCDC was established in 1979 as a land use matter. So the basic model was, it was an effort to preserve timberland and farmland and try to keep development within these urban growth boundaries. And the modeling was supposed to be that at any given time, you would have 20 years worth of inventory in the different designations, that being residential, industrial, and commercial zones, that would be able to accommodate the need for 20 years at the current rate of absorption. This is a key note right here, the current rate of absorption. So in other words, if you don't have much of it and it's not being absorbed, then when you speculate that, if you got zero and you multiply it times 20, apparently you don't need any. So that was the process. So what you should have is the current urban growth boundary, and almost at all times, the city should be going through the process of creating what is referred to as the urban area reserve. And the urban area reserve is sort of a halo outside of the current urban growth boundary, where they would look at future annexations and what would happen and what would be brought into the city. And that is a process during the urban area reserve process. This is a time where they're dealing with, you know, transportation connectivity, environmental impacts, services, sewer extensions, all of that sort of thing. So with in an academic mindset, it all makes perfect sense that, you know, as we assess our growth, we can make sure that we have 20 years worth of available inventory. We're constantly out on the periphery making certain that there's additional places that we could grow into when we deplete the need that we have here, and then make a smart transition into that urban area reserve, and that's where the annexation would transpire. But what's happened is they're not even started on the next urban growth boundary, haven't been started on the next urban growth boundary for 3 years now. So the whole system of the bureaucracy has broken down within their own goals and their own standards. So to take, because a lot of that land that you're mentioning there is currently zoned MUA, which is a multi-use agricultural zone. Some of it's EFU, which is exclusive farm use zone. Well, specifically in the LCDC documentation, it doesn't allow the transition for property to go directly from an agricultural zone straight into a residential or commercial zone. It has to go into an urban area reserve first and then transition in. You see what I mean?
So it could take several years for all of that to take place in what you call this halo area. That would be studied, and before somebody says, hey, let's go ahead and make all of this part of Bend City proper.
Exactly. And assuredly, it will take years, because there is the process. The city is called upon to show the needs, show their current rate of absorption, make a presentation to LCDC. LCDC then takes it, you know, kicks it upstairs and, you know, lets the bureaucrats up there kick it around for a little while. If they want it amended, then they kick it back for an amended. You know, I mean, it takes forever for this stuff to happen. This is, I heard it referred to as glacial speed. You know, it moves about as fast as a glacier.
Yes, very slow.
Yeah. And the problem is, in the ensuing years, like, you know, one of the things that we have a real shortage of, we talk about employment a fair amount in Bend, and we have a real shortage of industrial land. Well, industrial land is sort of an interesting use. Obviously, it generates an awful lot of employment, particularly in the manufacturing and distribution sector. But as a result of manufacturing and distribution, it requires trucks to be able to get there and turn around. So you can't create industrial land that's half-acre lots. There's not enough room to build a building and have a truck get in there and turn around to bring in materials or carry out the materials that you manufactured. And because we haven't had any industrial land to speak of inside the city of Bend, to my point earlier, let's say that there was 2 acres of industrial land taken in. Well, that means that all we need is 40 acres of industrial land and we'll have a 20-year supply. I was like, no, we haven't had any. So as a consequence, we really don't have an accurate absorption rate of what the market could support and what would best benefit the community. And then,
yes, and it seems as if the move is afoot to not have industrial land. And I remember well what the old mill district was and where all of that went. And so it's, let's take what was industrial and make it commercial and housing.
Well, and to that, Charlie, they're kind of manipulating the numbers there as well. You know, one of the things that happened a few years ago, I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, we always used to refer to housing starts, and that was always the numbers that were given by the, you know, the home builders associations and all that sort of thing, and it was sort of reflective of how much the town was growing by how many housing starts we were starting to have, right? So we knew, and in that, we knew what our absorption rates were, because if we have, you know, 3,000 housing starts and those are each 5,000 square feet of land, we know how much land it is, and then we can multiply that times 20. We know what we need moving forward, right? And then now this push, they transitioned that from housing starts to dwelling units. Well, now dwelling units account for apartments. Well, that means you don't need any land. And so like where the Corpine used to be, that 30-acre parcel, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, they're talking about putting, you know, 1,600 condos down there. Well, that's 30 acres of land and 1,600 condos. And, you know, I don't know when the last time was I was in, you know, my office and somebody came in and said, you know, hey, I want to live in a little condo with a storage locker down in the parking garage. You know, I mean, I just don't get that request very frequently. And we're going to build hundreds of these things. And as a result, we're not consuming any residential land or commercial land to speak of. And so when you multiply little consumption times 20, that means that your projection is that you don't need any in the future.
Oh, so this comes right back around to your earlier comments in the program about how the building heights are increasing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And they're building something that they're, you know, some people call it social engineering. Basically, hey, if you want to live here, this is what it's going to look like.
This is what you get.
This is what you get, because there's nothing else. And that's the reason why in recent weeks I've been telling people, you know, gosh, if you want a quarter acre, a half acre of land and you want a place to park your boat next to your house, buy it, because they ain't making no more of it. And the thing that's really unsettling and misguided is, like, there was that, what they call in the Stevens track down there, that 640 acres. This sort of gave city council, you know, sort of a reprieve, if you will, for not doing the process. Oh, no, we're bringing in a whole bunch of land and we're doing all this and we're doing all that. Well, their thumb's totally on the scale and they're totally controlling it from beginning to end, and it's not open. So what happens when there's a shortage of land like this is the land becomes so expensive that only the high dollar production builders are able to do the development. So they can regulate the inventory, they can control what comes on, and there's only a handful of them. So, you know, back in the days that you remember when you could go to one of these morning cafes and all of the different local contractors and the independent contractors that build a house or two a year and did all, there's no place for them to build here anymore.
Right, and so that kind of I noticed that area out on Stevens and 27th.
Yes, sir, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
I mean, that's a big area.
Well, and they're fudging all the rules out there. You know, they sold the first, you know, whatever it was, nearly 300 acres, and then the remainder of the parcel wasn't inside the urban growth boundary. So they're trying to make an exception to go ahead and increase the urban growth boundary to kind of capture that little corner there and sort of circumvent the process that's called for through LCDC. There's a lot of things that are going on, but what it's doing, I think my greatest concern, Charlie, moving forward, is that, you know, for, you know, and they don't have to be young people to be getting started, but for, you know, for people to kind of get started, to be able to get a toehold in the economy, to be able to buy a home, be able to do that sort of thing, it's getting increasingly difficult for them to do that on a salary or a wage earning job. And There's no relief on the horizon for that. And you know, when you get these people that were trained academically that say, no, this is what we're going to build. We're going to build these buildings. There's going to be retail space on the ground level. There's going to be some office space above that, and there's going to be residential spaces above that, and we'll deal with multimodal transportation, and everybody's going to be on a bicycle and walking, and this is the new utopian community that we're going to build, and that's the way it's going to be.
Yes, in theory it sounds wonderful, but reality is a whole different world.
I saw a guy this last week pushing his over by the old A&W over there on Greenwood Street, and there he was pushing his bicycle, slogging along in the snow, coming back from the east, you know, so he was coming around from Pilot Butte. And I looked at my wife and I go, just imagine, I mean, if they had their way, we'd be going to Costco on our bicycle and we'd be trying to drive through snow there with one of those armloads of toilet paper.
Yeah. that's the reality of it.
It's like it makes absolutely no sense. And imagine a mother that's getting up in the morning and she has, you know, two or three children. And they also have extracurricular activities. Okay, how are you going to make this happen on bicycles?
Yeah, and Central Oregon, you might have 2 weeks, 3 weeks out of the year that this is enjoyable.
Yeah, and as a mandate, and you know, I mean, I'm one of them. You know, there's a fair number of us that are over 55 years of age. I'm not really wild about riding my bicycle when it's icy.
Oh, come on. Where's your sporting adventure?
You're exactly right. It takes all the sport right out of it. But yes, Charlie, I strongly encourage you, you know, I mean, to speak your piece. We have a council, we talked about it last week, you know, where they're getting ready to build a $20 million bicycle bridge over the railroad tracks and the parkway downtown. That $20 million could be allocated in a number of different projects that would make Bend safer and more livable. But it's a pet project, and you know, they've got enough power and the voting power to be able to do it. You know, we got to get to the voting booths and you know, get some people to at least have some business acumen or understand you know, quality lifestyle that we've had and enjoyed that's sort of slowly changing. And then once it changes, you can't get it back.
If I see your name on a ballot, I'll vote for you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm there to back somebody else, Charlie. I don't think I'm going to be the one on the poster.
Oh, I understand.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for calling. You had just absolutely great questions today, and I'm certain that there's a number of people out there that enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciate you listening and your support.
All right. Well, you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you so much for the call.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, then, and there you go. You know, the growing pains of living in Bend, I'm certain that if I keep using the term, it'll come out as hate speech. But social engineering is really what is happening, and the dictate is coming down. They're telling you how you live and how it's going to live, and they're also telling you that how you've lived before was sick and wrong, and you got to change it. And you know, there needs to be some pushback on that to be able to maintain the fact that, you know, by golly, we pay a fair number of taxes and things for these, what do we call them, civil employees or whatever to work on our behalf and represent us. And instead, they're just sort of telling us how it's going to be and how Bend's going to be. And Bend is changing quite dramatically. I think almost everybody will acknowledge that. So, you know, let your representatives know your feelings and state your piece. So I guess we're going to take another break, and we'll slide back here and have some more fun stuff to talk about. The number at the station is always 541-388-1110. You can always contact me on my website, which is askfredjohnson.com. It's pretty straight ahead. Or email me, fred@dukewarner.com. And I want to thank you again for listening to Ask Fred Johnson here on FM News 100, 1110 KBND.